Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind.
Governor Tony Evers promises to recommend $200 million for broadband expansion in the first online State of the State message by a governor.
Every Wisconsinite should have access to high-speed internet, period.
In the Republican response, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says Evers has no plan to vaccinate Wisconsinites.
There's no room for delays, and there are no need for excuses.
Assembly Republicans won't accept the COVID-19 bill passed by the Senate, a bill the governor says he wants to sign into law. The Supreme Court is asked to take direct jurisdiction over challenges to any new redistricting plan. Seven candidates want to be elected superintendent of public instruction, forcing a February 16th primary before the April election. Rewind, your week in review for January 15th.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Lots of news, lots of updates this week on COVID-19 vaccinations, and we will get there, but before we do, Governor Tony Evers gave the first online State of the State message to the Assembly Republicans in the chamber. Let's listen to less than 2 minutes of that speech in which he highlights two of his most important themes. Please.
This pandemic has shown us firsthand that lack of access to high-speed internet continues to be a setback for kids, families, and businesses across our state. According to the FCC, more than 430,000 people who make up 25% of our state's rural population lack access to high-speed internet. Our state ranks 36th in the country for accessibility in rural areas. My 2021-23 biennial budget will invest nearly $200 million over the biennium into broadband. That's five times the amount invested in the 2013, 2015, and 2017 budgets combined. It's 2021, folks. Having access to high-speed internet is no longer a luxury. It's a necessity. Since the beginning of this pandemic, we saw an unprecedented influx of unemployment claims. It exceeded the number of claims even during the Great Recession. The fact of the matter is that previous administrations and more than a decade's worth of legislators have known this system was outdated and couldn't handle an economic crisis like the one this pandemic presented. Well, I'll tell you this, it's gone on long enough. It ends tonight. I'm announcing today I will be calling a special session of the legislature to take up a plan to modernize our unemployment system and help ensure nothing like this happens to the people of Wisconsin again. We know that replacing the system will take years. That's why it should have been done sooner. But it's also why we don't have another moment to waste. No politics, no posturing. Send me the bill and let's just get it done.
So there were three major themes in that speech, JR. First of all, his budget that he will unveil early in February, $200 million to expand broadband. That's up from $54 million in recent years. He has called a special legislative session to upgrade the unemployment insurance system that processes jobless claims that dates. It's a COBALT system. It dates from the 1970s. He wants $5.3 million immediately, $90 million over 10 years to upgrade it. His budget will also include requirements that the next set of congressional and legislative district lines be drawn in the open. He didn't deal specifically in that speech with vaccination updates, but we've got a lot of news on that later in the show. Your reaction to the first virtual State of the State?
Interesting. It was pre-recorded, so it gave the Evers office time to kind of weave in a few pre-recorded videos that were an interesting touch. Same time, it didn't allow him the opportunity to kind of add in the deal he struck with Devin LeMahieu on our COVID-19 bill, which would have been a nice thing to have in there. Overall, you can break those three proposals into a couple layers. One, the budget proposal on requiring lawmakers to take certain actions on districting, not going to happen. Republicans take out of the budget right away. Two, the call for a special session on the unemployment overhaul. Republicans answered back quickly that They believe he has the money already if he wants to reallocate, to put toward that. Don't expect that to go very far, although he could wrap that into his budget and get something done that way. And finally, the call for a broadband investment. Look, everybody in the Capitol is in favor of broadband expansion because they all have people in their districts who need it. So yeah, that one looks like the most likely of the three to actually get somewhere in this budget with lawmakers.
That's very true. But in his response, which we'll go to in a minute, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss really closed and focused on what he said is a lack of a state plan on vaccinations. We're going to spend a lot of time on vaccinations on this show. But just to show you the importance of Mr. Voss's insistence on vaccination problems, let's listen from about 2 minutes of Speaker Voss's response, please.
Wisconsin is an embarrassment compared to other states. Let me just take a minute to tell you some of the things that are happening around the country that we could learn a lesson from. Arizona is ramping up its vaccine rollout by opening a 24/7 distribution center at its State Farm Stadium. West Virginia has one of the best per capita vaccination rates in the nation and reportedly the first to vaccinate all the state's nursing home residents and staff, as well as assisted living facilities. New Jersey is planning to open 6 vaccine megasites, and a number of states have adopted drive-through clinics. What is happening today in Wisconsin? The subcommittee met today and decided prisoners should get their vaccines before your 65-year-old grandmother. That recommendation is available for public comment, and I need the people of Wisconsin to let the Evers administration how you feel about that decision that they're about to make. You can send an email to let them know your thoughts, dhssdmac@dhs.wisconsin.gov. It's important that you do that today. Governor, if you need help, there are offers on the table from the UW system and from the federal government. The vaccine distribution effort should be an all-hands-on-deck operation. There's no room for delays, and there are no need for excuses. We must prioritize the elderly and individuals with health complications. I join many others across the state, including a newspaper editorial board, a Wisconsin congressman, and pretty much everyone that we speak to. Governor Evers, do your job.
Okay, Jay, I want to talk about some other elements before we get to the most sensational charge. But first of all, other elements. Assembly Republicans will fight to return students to in-person classes statewide. We'll get to that in a minute in the split between the Senate and the Assembly. Republicans are to blame, the 10 years of Republican capital control deserves credit for the lowest tax ranking nationally in decades. We'll get a little bit more on that later. 9,000 claims are still pending for unemployment benefits, although the Secretary of DWD told me they may be within the 21-day window that the U.S. Department of Labor considers not a backlog. Now, JR, that charge that a subcommittee, a panel of experts, has recommended to DHS that prison inmates be vaccinated ahead of Speaker Voss's term, grandmas, how potentially explosive is that? Is that a major campaign issue here for if the governor runs again in less than 2 years?
If the administration accepts the recommendation, yes. So what happens is the state has this committee that's made up of healthcare professionals who are recommending who should be in the first wave, then the second wave, et cetera, when it comes to handing out the vaccine. As part of that discussion, they put forward a recommendation for, they call it, I think, 1B, the next wave of vaccinations, that prisoners be included in that, as well as people who are 70 or older. Now, that is going to be reviewed by the Department of Health Services, ultimately the governor's authority, so it's not a done deal. But if the governor signs off on that, then yeah, the ads write themselves. I mean, can you imagine the ad saying that Governor Evers approved vaccinating prisoners ahead of people who are 65? Now, there may be a good policy reason why. Prisoners are obviously the captive audience. They can't socially distance from where they are at. So you can make an argument that it's good health policy. However, the optics are very bad and the politics are even worse. So watch now, what does Evers do and what's administration do with that proposal, and does it sign off on that? Because if he does, Republicans are going to jump all over it.
Well, okay, but not inmates, obviously confined, but guards and staffers go home to their families, go back to their communities. So that's kind of, that's part of the context of this, how part of the context of what the Evers administration will consider.
Context doesn't play in TV ads. Remember that. If you're explaining you're losing in politics, it's a real simple political ad. He vaccinated prisoners and not people who are 65. End of story. So again, the policy may be sound from a health standpoint, but from a political standpoint, it's problematic.
Okay, I understand. We're taping Rewind a little bit later than usual, so we could get all the news that the governor and DHS just announced. So let's go to a new topic. What the governor just said is that he will be extending for 60 days the face mask health emergency declaration that says Wisconsinites statewide should wear a face mask in enclosed areas. That'll be extended for 60 days. He said, and the DHS official said, why are we doing this? Because the 7-day positive average was 2,319 cases per day. He also said that 9 vaccination teams, mobile vaccination teams, will start early next week, and they will go and put shots in arms, that's the terms, in areas identified by tribal and local health officials. The latest number, the Department of Health Services reports 213,000 vaccinations have been given. That's 57% of doses received. But demand for vaccinations has exceeded supply the last 2 weeks. A couple more items, a lot of news on vaccinations. Police, firefighters, and ETMs will start getting vaccinated next week. Now, as you just said, JR, you have a state panel recommending to DHS, and the deputy secretary said, we are in the public comment period. We will make a decision next week, and that'll be a controversial decision, as you alluded to, that DHS start vaccinating teachers, child care workers, prison inmates, and those over 70. And twice this week, both the deputy secretary and the assistant deputy secretary, when she testified before the Assembly Health Committee, they were asked, when can the general public expect to get vaccinated? They both gave the same answer, late spring, early summer. And an amazing a stat that we hadn't heard before. The deputy secretary at the press conference, which just concluded about an hour ago, said, we're now getting, let me check my notes, 567 doses per month. If our goal is 80% herd immunity by June, we need 1.4 million doses per month, three times what we're getting now. And let me look at my notes for the governor's comments. The governor said, if we're not getting the stuff, how can we vaccinate people? That's a long intro, JR. What was your take on all that just happened on the COVID-19 vaccinations?
Well, a couple of things. Republicans sense that there's a vulnerability here. They've been ramping up the pressure on Evers about the vaccine rollout. And talking to people this week, my impression is even if the governor got everybody vaccinated by late spring, Republicans will say it was a failure because they sense that things are not going well in their minds. They've got numbers from the CDC that shows that we are, I think, last now in the Midwest in terms of percentage of population that's been vaccinated. The flip side is you alluded to the other numbers about the percentage of doses that have been used. And the governor's making the argument that we can't vaccinate more people unless we have more doses. So the statistics kind of get used back and forth by each side, the ones that make them look the best. Again, that whole thing about the prisoners thing, that's when it cuts through the clutter for voters. So you got to watch that one. Beyond this, the governor's trying to take some actions to shore up this whole vaccination thing with the mobile units. There's another program that he announced today about going in and helping back to people in nursing homes. This is living facilities, I think it is.
Skilled facilities, yes.
So watch how that progresses because that's really key for him to keep moving that forward. And oh, by the way, we are not unique in our struggles. It's happening across the country, and part of it is driven by the federal government that has not maybe done the best job in getting vaccinations out there. I mean, hey, the vaccine got created way quicker or approved way quicker than people thought it was. The rollout since then, however, has been left a lot to be desired. There are questions about funding to the states to help them roll it out, et cetera. So it's not just like the state of Wisconsin is the only one having some issues getting shots in the arm.
Okay, I'm not defending the administration. I'm just citing the numbers. A week ago, they had said we had about 85,000, maybe it's 2 weeks ago, 85,000 shots in arms. Now we're up to 213.
Yep.
That is not a defense. You and I are not epidemiologists. I'm just saying the new number is 213,000 shots in arms. Okay, more on the COVID debate. The State Assembly will not accept the Senate passed bill, passed 29-2 in the Senate, that Governor Evers promptly said he would sign. The Senate dropped a couple provisions. I'm only going to highlight two, and you may want to add some, that the Senate Assembly provisions would have required school districts to vote every 2 weeks to offer offer online instruction, and would have said, you local governments, you have 14-day oversight over local public health emergency and restrictions, maybe occupancies, adopted by your local health departments. Assembly Majority Leader Steinke said the state the Senate bill, unacceptable. The Assembly would at some future point stick to some of its original provisions. The governor again said today, let's pass the Senate bill as soon as possible. What's going to happen with this back and forth?
Good question. Will Robin Voss, the Assembly Speaker, amend the Senate bill and send it back? Will they all go back to the table, Voss, LeMahieu, and Evers? You know, I'm not sure they know right now, because passions are kind of high right now about this bill and how these things played out. Interesting that LeMahieu made a decision to basically reach a deal with the governor on a bill that he would sign. And the feedback I've gotten is because, remember, this bill, as passed by the Senate, includes liability protections for businesses, schools, churches, nonprofits. Those kinds of things are not really necessarily what things Dems love to do. But that, from what I was told, was such a big piece of what Republicans wanted to get done to help businesses get back to quote-unquote normal at some point. They're willing to sacrifice these other things that certain Republicans wanted in their bill to get a deal with the governor. Because the reality was, the bill that Robin Voss produced was never going to be signed into law. There were just too many provisions in there that Governor Evers was never going to sign off on, that it wasn't going to go as is. The question really is, could Republicans have gotten something more out of the governor in a concession than just the liability protections? And that's where we're going to go from here. Can Republicans get more provisions, such as there's a provision in the Assembly bill about banning employers from requiring a vaccination as a condition of employment? Could they get something like that in there and get the Evers sign off? We'll see where we go from here.
Right. Okay. Now let's talk about Washington. It was predictable, but the U.S. House members cast two votes. Number one, should the Vice President Pence trigger the 25th Amendment? And when that didn't pass, when that passed, and Vice President Pence said, I'm not going to do that, then the U.S. House, as you're well aware, voted to impeach the president. But our three House Democrats, Congressman Pocan, Kine, and Moore, voted to impeach and voted to invoke the 25th Amendment. Our five U.S. House Republicans, Brian Stiles, Scott Fitzgerald, Glenn Grothman, Tom Tiffany, and Mike Gallagher, voted not to invoke the 25th Amendment to have the vice president begin removal, and voted not to impeach. But let's add a P.S. The U.S. Senate is going to vote, after the January 20th inauguration of Democratic President-elect Biden, the U.S. Senate will hold a trial. And let's look at what our senior U.S. Senator Ron Johnson said. He wants an independent commission appointed to investigate the security failures that allowed the Capitol to be breached on January 6th, resulting in five deaths. Translate that Johnson quote for me, JR.
He's focused on that. He's not going to vote to impeach the president or to remove him from office. I'm sorry. That's just not going to happen. Republicans are unhappy about some of the security breakdowns in the Capitol. This is something you're seeing more and more from Republicans calling for some kind of commission to look into what happened. Two, it's interesting that Republicans like Scott Fitzgerald and Tom Tiffany, two congressmen from Wisconsin, just a week ago were voting to reject the electoral votes of two states, and now they're calling impeachment divisive and that we should move past this and get on with the healing process. That's kind of an odd juxtaposition to people I talked to about taking that vote 1 week ago than making that statement this week.
Right. We have a lot of news, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but the Wisconsin Examiner then reported that 15 Wisconsin Assembly legislators, 15 Republican legislators, 14 in the Assembly, one in the State Senate, sent a letter to the Vice President asking him to delay certification. But what's more interesting is that included the new chairman of the Assembly Campaign and Elections Committee, Representative Janelle Branchin, and additional members of the same committee, Representative Sanfilippo, Murphy, and Thiesfeld, Democratic Assembly Leader Hintz, cried foul, said they should be removed. Look for any immediate fallout from that, JR. We don't have a lot of time, but I'm really interested in your reaction.
No, but Branchin told me that she's going to keep pursuing the hearings that former Chair Ron Tusser, like the one he had in December, looking into irregularities. There's a continued buzzword among Republicans that they think there were irregularities in the November election. Again, there's been no evidence by anywhere I've seen in court that's been supported of widespread fraud. But when these were irregularities, we're talking about things like the Elections Commission advice to local officials. They believe that people exceed their authority under state law, and this is an issue. Now, there's going to be fraud in this election. There always, everyone, you're going to have people double voted. But in terms of the magnitude you need to overturn the results, not going to see anything like that. Expect this to play into what Republicans want to do later on, which is an election integrity bill, quote unquote, that I'm going to guess is going to do things like try to rein in the powers of the Elections Commission and what it can tell clerks to do, try to rein in that definitely confined status for people who vote absentee but are confined due to age, illness, or infirmary. Watch things like that going forward in this debate, because that's what they're trying to get as trying to rein things in they think are being abused, whereas Democrats think that Republicans are overreacting and trying to change the rules because they're unhappy that they lost.
Right. Okay, two more subjects before we get to your stocks. The State Supreme Court was asked this week, a public hearing, draft a rule that would say when it's almost inevitable that the congressional legislative maps to be drawn by the Republican legislature will be very likely to be vetoed by the Democratic governor. If that happens, State Supreme Court, you take immediate control of this issue. This law, the request for the rule was filed by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, Republican legislative leaders, and formerly Assembly Speaker Scott Jensen. As I said, the rule would say if the leg and gov can't agree on new congressional and district lines, the State Supreme Court would take original action, take immediate jurisdiction. I was intrigued, as we'll hear in a moment. Chief Justice Rogenczak said, I have real questions about this. Opponents said the rule would invite continuation of the 2011 partisan secret redistricting process. Before I get your comments, JR, let's listen to the chairman of the People's Maps Commission. Let's listen to former Assembly Speaker Jensen defend the rule, and then the comments from Chief Rogenczak, please.
Our main objective is to make sure that a state court is handling this matter, and that's what both the state and the federal courts have suggested in the past, that that's where these matters should be resolved if the governor and the legislature are unable to do so. And that makes sense to me, because one of the key factors in drawing a map is to maintain communities of interest. And Wisconsin figures will know better what those communities of interest are. The legislature and the governor obviously have a lot of history and experience that teach them what those are. The members of this court and other state courts have to run for office. They get to learn what the communities of interest are around this state. But when it's decided by a federal court, and as I recall in 2002, there were one judge was from Wisconsin and two were from other states. They don't have that knowledge about communities of interest.
Many supporters of the Strong Maps, Fair Maps movement view this petition as a thinly veiled effort to derail the commission and its mission of nonpartisan maps. Commencing a court-controlled process from the outset as proposed by the petitioners would prove not only to be time-intensive, as Madam Chief said before, but ultimately threaten the efforts of our commission. The petitioner's brief mischaracterizes the concepts expressed in the numerous written committees opposed to their position. Respectfully, there is no evidence that the federal district courts in Wisconsin are going to rush to accept a case about mapping before there is an actual case and controversy. This court shouldn't either. This court should deny the petition because it seeks to use this court as a political tool.
What your rule does is it permits this court to draw the lines. You put us in a proactive position. Our court is reactive. We don't look out about Wisconsin and say, oh, something's going wrong. oh, we better step in there and fix it. We determine cases and controversies that are brought to us by someone else. So this rule makes the court proactive. That's just not how we operate.
Here's my question. When the Chief Justice says, that's not how this court operates, pretty good sign this rule is going to be turned down.
Yeah, I always hate predicting what courts are going to do. But remember, part of this is that typically a lawsuit goes circuit court first, appeals court, Supreme Court, and the circuit court's a level that develops the record. The Supreme Court usually doesn't. The court can still take original action, anything it wants to, whenever it wants to, just by a vote of the justices. So even they reject this rule, there's nothing to prevent the court from saying sometime in the next year, hey, we're going to take this lawsuit directly and hear it. The issue is whether the court's a proper body to develop that record and dig into that. And one of Rogenstaff's concerns is they don't have the staff or the expertise to draw a map. Now, interesting point, the Republicans pushing this are arguing to the court, well, you don't have to draw a map. What you really ought to do is look at submitted maps, pick one, and oh, you should try to make as few changes as possible to the last map drawn by the lawmakers, i.e. Republicans, 10 years ago, and that should be your guide. Well, that would not sit well with Democrats, so watch that piece of the discussion as well.
Okay, that's a very good point. Okay, we're going to put up a graphic. Seven candidates want to be elected state superintendent of public instruction the April 6th election. We're in time constraints, so I'm not going to identify them all because their pictures, what they do now, are on your screen. JR, I'm going to be interviewing some of these candidates the week of January 25th, but so I haven't really got into their backgrounds. Anything we should know about these seven candidates quickly?
Four being watched kind of most closely: Deb Kerr, former Brown Deer superintendent. She looks likely to be one of the candidates who the choice movement could get behind. Same with Shondalyn Hendrick Williams, who survived the challenger nomination papers that was filed by Deb Kerr. Watch those two. Also Sheila Briggs and Jill Underley, probably in the best position to get the union support. This race for years has been about who does WEAC endorse. But choice people have kind of played a little bit, but maybe haven't gone full out in one of these races. Might they this time? We'll see. Those four get the most attention. And then kind of the next one's Troy Gunderson, who was a superintendent out in Western Wisconsin. I haven't seen his finance report yet, but the four I mentioned have raised the most money to date, and we're waiting to see what Troy does and where he fits in this whole puzzle right now.
Okay, and just a P.S., we have invited these seven candidates to do Wisconsinite candidate interviews the week of January 25. Okay, J.R., let's flip to your stock picks, please.
So rising taxpayers, the Wisconsin Policy Forum found that the state local tax burden as a share of income dropped to a 50-year low. That's as long as they've been tracking the records, essentially. It was 10.2% of personal income. Noteworthy that it's down to that point. Republicans obviously jumped on right away and said, hey, this is because of us, what we did in the last decade. Part of it is that income grew at a faster rate than taxes did. And while income taxes grew at a slow rate, collections grew at a slower rate, property taxes are still pretty high in Wisconsin, still going up at a significant pace year to year.
And Mick, sir.
Oh, Devin Lemahieu. So this whole standoff with Robin Voss and the Coville is fascinating because you have a faction, the Senate Republican Caucus, that picked Lemahieu to be the leader because they want somebody who's going to stand up to Robin Voss. That's really their perspective. They don't want to let Robin Voss drive the policy train all session long. They want to be equals. And they picked this first major bill out of the chute as a fight. Now, in talking to people, there are those who thought that Lemahieu is showing he can govern because he's willing to work with Governor Evers and get really a priority for Republicans, which is liability protections. There are also people who question, why would you do this and give in without getting more? Because if the governor wants to sign a bill, he's got to get something from the legislature, so they could have done more. Oh, and by the way, it's unusual to see a rebuttal, say the state address by a Republican leader that's half as long as the actual speech itself by the governor. But even more unusual to have Robin Voss, the speaker, give it and then take a veiled swipe at Devin Lemahieu for giving in his words, to Evers on this bill. There's a real tension there.
Right.
What I'm watching now is how does Lemahieu navigate that? Is he going to be able to work with Evers, or work with Evers and with a Voss? Or are Voss and Lemahieu going to be stuck at loggerheads? And oh, by the way, the more the GOP leaders are fighting each other, they're not fighting the governor's unified front. That's good for Tony Evers.
Yeah, good point. Okay, squeeze for time. Falling, please.
Anti-abortion advocates, the number of abortion reform in Wisconsin went up for a fourth straight year in 2019. Not great news for them.
Okay. And we at Rewind want to bring you the latest possible news. So we said that the governor has just announced an extension for 60 days of the mask up requirement. State Senator Steve Noss, a Republican from Whitewater, has put out a press release. I am quickly sponsoring a resolution to overturn immediately that public health declaration. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for January 15.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.